Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, what is the path forward for African Americans? We have been talking about that with various wisdom from elders. Bob Johnson, what the heck? We'll put him in that group. He met with Donald Trump and he says Black America should give Donald Trump a chance. He will explain that to me and to you, and so you want to look forward to this conversation. Speaking of Donald Trump, he has lost the popular vote, still claims that he won by a landslide. Well, Clinton has won actually almost 2.5 million more votes. And so we'll also look at this question of whether or not it's time to scrap the Electoral College. Congressman Steve Cohen of Memphis says, yes, it is time. In less than 35 years, the U.S. will be browner and less white. In fact, more whites are dying in 17 states than white kids being born. What happens with America over the next generation? Also, gospel rising star Juke Lynn Carr joins me to chat about her chart-topping album, The Life Project, and much more. Folks, it's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Folks, 4% of Black women voted for Donald Trump. That's 96% of Black women who voted for Hillary Clinton. 13% of Black men voted for Donald Trump. That was a 9-point difference between Black men voting for President Barack Obama in 2012 compared to Black women as well. Same thing with Donald Trump. So the question is, where do African Americans stand over the next 4 years when it comes to a Trump presidency? Well, Bob Johnson, we call him Billionaire Bob Johnson. He met with Donald Trump. Folks were saying that was he going to join the cabinet? He says, look, I don't have time for that. I'm trying to get paid. He says African Americans should give Donald Trump a chance. You might recall here on the show, we talked about his letter that he released shortly after the election, saying that African Americans, again, should have common issues as opposed to really focused on one particular party. So let's talk with him about that. Bob, welcome back to TV One.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here. Always good to see you, Roland.
So the meeting that you had with Donald Trump, was that at his invitation or did you send word to him? I want to sit down and talk to you.
It was at his invitation. When I wrote the memo about how African Americans should address the Trump presidency, that memo got to Trump's inner circle. And as a result of that, I got an invitation to sit down and talk to him.
Okay, so everybody was talking about, will you join the administration? That wasn't an interview for an administration job.
Not for me. I've never wanted a job in government. I don't care whether it was Donald Trump, President Clinton, or anybody else. I don't want to work for the government.
So when you say Black Americans should give him a chance, what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm saying essentially what President Barack Obama said, what Hillary Clinton said, and I said Black Americans should try to find common ground with the president who now controls both the House and Senate, because you have to engage power in some way to see if there's an opportunity to build a relationship that will benefit the interests of African Americans. And I said that, Roland, echoing what Congressman William Clay said back in 1971 when the 13 original members of the Congressional Black Caucus came together to found the caucus. And he said, and I quote, and these are not my words, these are his words, is Black people should have no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests. So looking at it from through that prism, it is in the interest of African Americans to give Donald Trump and his administration a chance to show what they're going to do for African Americans. When I met with him, one of the things I said to him, I said, President-elect Trump, don't come to Black America, what you did during the campaign, and say, what do you got to lose? Approach and engage Black America by saying, this is what you have to gain if you involve yourself with the policies of the Trump administration.
But also, I think it was important, and I have been saying this for years to Republicans, don't come to black people with that BS with the party of Lincoln and we freed the slaves. I said, first of all, that's not really a memory that we frankly want to think about. I said, if you look at the Republicans who have had success with black voters, they actually listen to black people first, saying, what are your issues? What are your concerns? And then, this is where I stand. This way we can work together. George Vannevich did it as the mayor of Cleveland, as a governor of Ohio, as a U.S. senator from Ohio. Mike Huckabee, before he lost his mind, did the same thing in Arkansas. There are other Republicans who have done that.
I totally agree with that. We're saying essentially the same thing. The Republicans shouldn't ignore us or actively oppose us, and the Democrats shouldn't take us for granted. I could point to you many occasions where the Democrats will say, we don't need to worry about the black vote. If you read the papers today and listen to the pundits, every article, every discussion is about how do the Democrats reclaim the white male voter in the Rust Belt.
When in fact, frankly, if the Clinton campaign had listened to several black people and even stuff I said on this show,
they wouldn't have this problem because
right, they literally would have won Michigan, Wisconsin,
and
Pennsylvania.
And that's the problem. I mean, I've been at this for a very long time. I'm a staunch Democrat, great friend of Bill and Hillary Clinton, and wanted them to win. But you can't win an election by saying, and I sent this to John Podesta. I said, John, please tell the secretary to stop saying how bad Donald Trump is. Black people know that if that's what they believe. Start telling how good Hillary is going to be for black Americans. They never did it. They played identity politics. They didn't talk about the issues. And as a result of that, we didn't get the turnout.
But here's what you have here. You have raw feelings. You have a visceral reaction to Donald Trump. Some people are ticked, they're mad, they're angry, and they're saying, look, I don't want any part of this guy. What do you say are, let's say, 3, 4, 5 issues, and I'm going to bring up a couple in a minute as well, something that I did on the Tom Jordan Morning Show, that you say, this is where black folks should be saying how we can work together with the Trump administration.
Let me say this. First of all, a visceral reaction is not a policy. It's an emotion. So standing out and picketing, if you want to do, as I said in my memo, if you want to picket and protest, do it, but do it peacefully. And then the other thing I said is there'll be a lot of elections between now and 2020, from everything from dog catcher to senator. We need to get out and vote and exercise that ballot power. Don't think that the world comes to an end because Donald Trump is elected. And at the same time, begin to engage the Trump administration on things he said he's going to do. He said he's going to improve the inner cities. Well, that means jobs. That means the more capital into the inner cities for construction and investment and infrastructure. That means taking the opportunity to make sure African Americans are treated fairly at the polls or in every place else. So a lot of things that we believe in, and we've said to the Democratic Party, do these things. Let's take that same basket of public policy issues, bring it to the steps of Reince Priebus, Steve Bannon, President-elect Trump, all of whom I met when I met with him, and say, okay, here's your chance, here's your shot. We're going to give you the benefit of the doubt, but you have to show up.
I spoke at Dillard University a couple of weeks ago, and what I said to the students there, I said, and this has always been my position in the election, it doesn't matter who we supported. After the election, we are still constituents. We're constituents. And if you look at white folks who supported other candidates, no matter who wins, they then make it clear they still go in with a list of demands. So a couple of weeks ago on the Tom Jordan Morning Show, I laid out what I call Platform for America. I call it 2.0. Robert Abbott, when he founded the Chicago Defender, did this, where he laid out these were his concerns. He put them on the front page, first in 1922, then in 1928. Atlanta Mayor Maynard Jackson, when he met with Randall Robinson, had this idea of coming up with what he called the black card. Here are these 8 or 10 issues that will be on this card. We meet a politician. Where do you stand on this, yes or no? Do you support this, a yes or no? And so I said, okay, Hillary Clinton proposed $25 billion for HBCUs. We should look Donald Trump and say, okay, we want $50 billion over the next 10 years for our HBCUs. Black folks got only 1.7% or $385 million in small business loans
in 2013 out of $23.09 billion. We want the percentage of our population, which would be $3.5 billion every single year. Those are two of the things I said and say, okay,
I think this is what we want. You're absolutely right, and that means engaging. I mean, you could point fingers at Donald Trump, you can point fingers at Steve Bannon, you can point fingers at the whole Republican administration, but that's not going to get you where you want to be, which is permanent interests of African Americans being addressed by either party. As long as we lock ourselves into one party, in a two-party system, we're going to be diluted in our power. And that's why when I saw earlier, you may be talking about the Electoral College.
Right.
My argument is, if you get rid of the Electoral College, Black Americans should insist upon a plurality vote process where if you have two candidates running, somebody has to get 50% of the vote in order to win the election.
Right.
If we vote as a block like we always do, and we nominate a favorite son African American candidate, they pick a caucus member, whomever, run that candidate, we vote as a block for him, it's going to be hard for anybody to get a 50% for the election. Then when there's a runoff, we sit down with 10% of the vote or 8% of the vote, which can tilt the election. We're the balance of power. Then we go shopping. You know, you want to win on the Republican side? Here's what we want. You want to win on the Democratic side? Here's what we want. Because we're the only group in this country that vote as a block. 95%+ of our votes have historically gone to the Democrats. White men don't vote like that. Hispanics don't vote like that. We're the only people that's a permanent block.
In the last 45 years, because there was a point before where we were that permanent block for the Republicans. And again, what happened was when Hoover comes in with his White Lily Party, all of a sudden that began to shift. Democrat Wilson comes in, racist, does Birth of a Nation. Then FDR comes in and changes it. But here's the thing.
Well, that change didn't take place until Kennedy and Nixon.
Right. No, but what I'm saying is, but the block, literally, they said that the black vote for the Republican Party was like a ship. And that's what they called it. But here's the thing, though. You said something about pointing fingers, because I think somebody who's listening and watching, they're saying, okay, I hear you, Bob, but I'm still ticked. This is the thing I've said. We should still look Donald Trump in the eye, Steve Bannon in the eye, Reince Priebus in the eye, and say, let's be clear. Your voter suppression tactics, we will fight that tooth and nail. We will fight that every step of the way. But you're saying that's still separate from an agenda.
No, absolutely. That's not in our permanent interest. Voter suppression, denial of any kind of rights that are inalienable to anybody who's an American citizen, that's absolutely not in our permanent interest. But at the same time, we should look the Democrats, we should look Tim Kaine in the eye, we should look Nancy Pelosi in the eye and say, look, we've been loyal to you for over 30-some years. Give us the right to say that we want for example, something simple as a retirement bill that would allow people who are losing their 401ks by cashing out, have the Labor Department sign a document saying you can track your 401k, maintain that account, and have it grow economically. That's a simple piece of paper. Pass my version of the Rooney Rule, the RLJ rule, which would ask companies before you make a hire or hire a minority or hire a contractor, you must, under enhanced best practices, interview a minority candidate for that job. You must interview a minority contractor for that contract.
Now, question.
Those things can be done and put on the table by any party.
In your meeting with Donald Trump, did you bring up the RLJ rule? What was his response?
Absolutely. Brought up the RLJ rule, brought up the need for more retirement income, brought up the need for more capital flowing into minority banks, brought up the need to appoint a minority and urban affairs staff person in Donald Trump's White House reporting to the chief of staff. I brought up all of these things, and I said, Mr. Trump, these are issues that will get you engaged with African Americans. If you don't engage them, you're going to continue to get, 3-4% of black vote.
All right, I'll ask you this here. So we saw this during the campaign, and that is, and I know for a fact, Clinton campaign was sitting on $65 million. They were being pressed to spend resources with black firms to get the vote out. Also, they were not truly advertising with black media. Then all of a sudden, the last week of the campaign, they were in trouble, and they just started throwing cash, and it was kind of like you're too late. What I've heard from other people, I've heard this from prominent Democrats, but also heard it from African Americans outside, that black folks, and that is African Americans of means, folks like you and others, black folks have to create our own apparatus where we drive our own grassroots and not depend on a campaign to put those resources together. So the question for you, a bunch of rich Democrats, donors will be getting together in with David Brock in January, sort of plotting the future. Is it time for a group of well-to-do African Americans to come together and say, we have to put together an apparatus where we are funding our own grassroots efforts for 2018 and 2020?
I would do that. I would be the biggest supporter of that, Roland, if it's on this condition. If we came together with the idea that we're going back to what Bill Clay said, no permanent friends. This is right. Not money for the Democrat. This is not money against the Republican. This is for black interests.
Right. So what I'm saying is if it's not a campaign deal, but if it is a very specific get out the vote apparatus, because in the New York Times piece, probably about three weeks before the election, Congressman Butterfield and Congressman Clyburn were both quoted as saying to the Clinton campaign, you got to release those funds in order to hire those black firms who know how to reach black people. Because the Clinton campaign, frankly, they sent white staffers to HBCU campuses trying to sign up black kids.
When I was running BET, and you know this as well, and Alfred will know this from TV1, whenever we would go to the Democrats during the election and say, we need money to advertise on BET or TV1, you know what they would tell us? They'd say, look, Bob, there's a district in Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania where we really got to win that district because that's where the white voters are who we need to pull over. Basically, we got y'all. So we're not going to give you any money.
No, in fact, they said this year. They literally, I know for a fact.
That's what they used to tell us.
They literally said this year, I noticed for a fact, to reach black women, we could advertise on Ellen.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa. You know black women are watching TV1, BET, Bounce, OWN. What are you talking about? Literally, a white male with a campaign said, oh, no, we keep advertising on Ellen to get the black woman.
Yeah, well, they told us, we can't afford to spend money with you. We got to go into these divided kind of districts and win those congressional districts where we may lose. That's what they would do. And they'd say, Bob, we got your voters. 90% of your voters are going to vote for us anyway, so we don't need to advertise. That's taking us for granted. That's being paternalistic towards black America. So my idea is this. Any group of black folks that come together should fly under the banner of no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests. And that means we don't raise money for the Democrat or with the Democrat. We aren't called together by a Democrat operative saying, let's do this. We aren't called together by a Republican operative saying, let's do it ourselves. Take our own destiny in our own hands.
All right, so let's do it. Because again, I've heard it from so many different people. I've heard it from people now this election is over. Steve Phillips has been very critical of all these Democratic organizations virtually spending no money on black pollsters, on black political consultants, and the same thing. And what I've heard from different people is that you're really talking about something in the area of $5 to $7 million in terms of over the next, thinking in terms of 2018 and 2020. Because in 2018, you got the midterms. So it's always a down year, driving black turnout there as well. You've got 800,000 unregistered African Americans and Latinos in Georgia alone. Georgia potentially can be a purple state. You also looking at some of the other states as well. I believe that has to happen. And right, that's not a Democratic thing or Republican thing. It's no. We're going to ensure we're maximizing our vote because we absolutely can flip numerous elections when we're voting our power.
We need to be the balance of power in a two-party system because we vote as a bloc. This is the most important thing to understand. No other ethnic group in America votes as a bloc other than black Americans. White women don't do it. White men don't do it. Latinos don't do it. Asians don't do it. We vote as a bloc. When you vote as a bloc in a country or in an electoral process, you can become the balance of power because your voting power is not split. And we should recognize that and exercise that. And I think that's, to me, is where the future of Black America needs to be in this electoral process. This is a divided nation. You see it every day on television. So I think, unfortunately, it's going to be a divided nation for a long time. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we see a rising Hispanic population. They will become the dominant minority in the next 10 or 15 years. We will become the second minority. Where will we go when the two-party system say, instead of going after the Black vote, we're going to concentrate our firepower, our money, our attention, and our policies on the Hispanic vote? So we have to take our own destiny in hand, and if we don't do that, we will be diluted and we will be insignificant in the electoral process, mainly because we're already housed in the states, primarily, where the Democrats are going to always win. They always win, well, before this election, they're going to win New York. So our vote is diluted in New York. They're gonna win, for the most part, Michigan.
Illinois, Chicago. Well, the other problem is a significant number of our votes are in southern states and also not red states.
But, right. And therefore, we can become that balance of power in those states that are red, that could go purple or could go blue. But we got to get something for that. That's my point is. So if Donald Trump's delivered something to us, the things you outline, the things I outline, there's nothing wrong with voting Republican. We did it for over 100 years.
Let me say this, which is a reality. If you also say we want this, and get it, white folks do it all the time. Get it and still vote for the side. Look, the new Treasury Secretary for Donald Trump
voted for, big-time
has
Democrat.
Given money to a big-time Democrat. Right. Same thing with Ross. So really what you're also saying is, here's our agenda. We want this, and if we still get it, we still might vote for somebody else, but we still get it.
It's a secret ballot.
Absolutely. Well, look, here's the deal. That media I'm talking about, I mean, it's real. That needs to happen.
I will go to that meeting if somebody calls the meeting together.
What if you call it?
I would call
Let's
the
call
meeting
it.
If the meeting is flies under the banner of what Bill Clinton said.
No, that's fine. Here's the deal.
You and I will call it.
Okay.
You and I will call it.
Okay, let's call a meeting. And we'll figure out. We can have it at, like I say, like when they meet. It's on a weekend. Look, X number of people come here for that particular weekend, which lays the path because we have to fund our own grassroots. We can't wait every election for the candidate or the party. Can you please fund it? We have to drive our vote.
But we first have to have a philosophy and an ideology behind the fundraising. I don't want to raise money. I raise money a lot of times,
yes.
But I have an ideology. I want to make more money. So I understand how to raise money. That's not the issue. For here, I want to have an ideology behind why are we raising this money? When I call a donor and say, hey, come to this meeting and we're asking everybody to put up, you know, whatever you can based on whatever you can give.
Right.
To raise a pack, for instance. But what is the philosophy of this pack? If they say this pack is no permanent enemies, no permanent friends,
right.
Just permanent interest. I'm with that.
All right. So here's what we do. So you and I will call that. We'll talk. We'll figure out date, meet in place, and we'll do that.
Okay. I'm with it because I believe this is essential to African America's future in this divided nation.
No, I agree. Because by 2044, there will be no one major ethnic group in America, no one group that's dominating, and you're absolutely right. As you move towards that, our vote's going to be critical.
Absolutely.
We'll make it happen. I ain't going to give as much as Bob can give. I'm trying to get to his level.
Will you do it on the basis of tithing?
Yeah, that's precise. That's how we'll do it. All right.
All right.
Thanks
man.
A bunch.
Good
All right,
you.
Folks,
Thank
we come back. We'll talk more with our panel about what we just talked about right here with Bob Johnson, News One Now. We'll also talk about the Electoral College. Is it time for us to get rid of that? Plus, as I said to y'all, by 2044, there will be no one ethnic group that will dominate this country. And in fact, right now in 17 states, more whites are dying than whites are being born. What does that mean for America's future? We'll break that down next. News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Welcome back to News One Now on TV One. I want to get right to our panel. I know they got some thoughts about the conversation I just had with Bob Johnson. Joining me right now, folks, we have Brandon Cooper, chairman of the Prince George's County Republican Party, George Jefferson Urey, CEO and founder of In the Public Eye Communications, Amber J. Phillips, co-director of Black. The point that Bob made about, look, Trump is the president. Republicans control the House, control the Senate. You look at 31 Republican governors. You look at the legislatures across the country as well. And so the question is, do African Americans engage the Republican Party, saying these are our issues, this is what we want, these are our demands, or do folks say no, we're just going to oppose?
I think that we have to engage. I think that what Bob was saying about forming, and you and Bob were talking about forming a PAC, is something I've been saying for the last 6 months.
Well, it's not necessarily a PAC,
But some sort of structure. And I think that his point about that it's an emotion, what we're feeling right now, but it's not a policy. And that we actually do have to come up with an agenda and a policy and take it to both parties and say, this is our demands, this is our intentions, and this is what we want you to do, and support those who, whether they're in the House or the Senate or the governor's seat or mayors, and support those who understand and support this agenda.
And for folks, go ahead.
I think it's also important to mention that we're having this conversation as if there aren't groups out there who have put together agendas. Black Lives Matter has a full policy platform on their website that extends not just to Democrats, but it went over to Republicans. These black organization groups were probably the only folks who were prepared for either way this election went. Another point we have to mention is whose interest is Bob actually talking about? We have to acknowledge the fact that he's talking to African Americans as someone who's one of the richest people in America. So when he talks about the interest, and this came out the same week Donald Trump released a tax plan that actually benefits people like him while leaving low-income and moderate-income black folks for nothing. Donald Trump is threatening to change the tax code where head of household can no longer be casted, which will leave a lot of black people without a refund check or the lowest we have ever seen. And what we know about those refund checks is that we use them to take care of our families.
Well, here's the deal. First of all, Bob did not say there's no agenda. Yes, there are. First of all, Black Lives Matter has an agenda. Mm-hmm. NAACP has an agenda. Mm-hmm. National Urban League has an agenda. Black Women's Roundtable has an agenda. So that's there. No, what he is saying is, which I agree with that. Our interests, just like when President Barack Obama came in, we were excited for the first black president, and I said yes, but he's also the 44th. Our job is to press and engage him on our agenda, like the previous 43. Mm-hmm. But the question is, will we do that? Will we, whether it's economic, whether it's social, whether it's cultural, will we do that? And then the question is, what does it look like? Brandon, go ahead.
President Barack Obama's election back in 2008 when he won, and Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell came out and said we'll make him a one-term president. Mm-hmm. That was wrong. I came out, spoke out against it, and I think it's wrong, you know, fast forward 8 years for us to come out the block not wanting to work with the president. For the next 4 years, he is going to be the president. We need to, you're talking about interest. The interests are jobs in our community, education, safer streets. Those are the same interests. And we need to hold him, his feet to the fire.
How he plans
to come
on
through.
Doing them
and
all
I agree.
Are completely
and I
different.
Agree. And we need
this
to
is a man who,
a
like, we have to talk about yes. Donald Trump in context.
And I agree.
Yes, if it were any other Republican president, we could say we need to go to him, but the pushing is going to look a bit different. Mm-hmm. We're not only have to going to advocate for our policies, but what we're looking at is black people and people of color are going to die under this administration.
Well, we have to engage
we're
on going
to have to protect immigrants. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to protect people who are protesting against police brutality and all these different things because who knows what Donald Trump is going to put on us as
you know,
but we know that Barack
so
Obama took
president.
A stand
nope.
on it. But Donald Trump has.
But Amber, I hear what you're saying. I think you're absolutely
no,
right.
No, stop. No, hold on, stop. Wait a minute, stop right there. I gotta stop you right there. Because you talked about the president took a stand on those issues. Yes, but it is a fact that in 2014, mm-hmm. in 2013, of the $23.09 billion in small business loans that were handed out
In 2013, only $385 million went to African Americans, 1.7%. 2008, last year, President Bush, it was 8.2%. And I can tell you, when I pressed this administration on that, it took the Small Business Administration 3 months to get back with a basic answer. New head of the SBA came in. And so here's why I'm stating that. Was the president responding when it came to the issues of criminal justice reform? Yes. On the issues like housing, and I've said this, this ain't nothing new. Can anybody say, oh my God, Roland, you're sending out? No. I believe housing was one of the greatest failures because we lost 53% of our black wealth. So the point I'm making is, yes, there are some things that the President Barack Obama did that were good. There were others where it fell short. What I hear Bob saying is, it's really the same thing. Our job is to still go in and say, yes, you're the president. Mm. These are our expectations on voter suppression, on criminal justice reform, on police departments, but also on small business loans, on housing, on this. These are our list of demands. The question, though, is whether or not folks are going to be willing to do that. And what if, and I'll ask you the question, I'll ask all three of you. Amber, I'll start with you. What if he says, all right, you called on me to say $50 billion to HBCUs over the next 10 years, I'll do it. What's our response?
I don't understand the question in
Amber, the question is very simple. If we have a list of demands, and one of those demands is we want this federal government to invest in our HBCUs, we are asking for $50 billion over the next 10 years, an allocation of $5 billion annually. If he says, I'll agree to that, what's our response?
So if he says I agree to that, does that mean you're now going to throw your support behind this administration?
Yes. No, Amber, that's the point. I'm asking specifically. If we say this is one of our demands,
all we're gonna do is do HBCU and business.
No! Oh my God!
Wait a minute, Roland. That's not what he's saying. The question he's giving you is real clear. We have 27 demands, and just he picked one off the list. Wait a minute. No, you're not listening. And this is the example of where Bob is talking about. We have this belief and feeling about Bob Johnson that's absolutely true. Steve Bannon is his chief strategist. He has not admonished white supremacy at the level we need, but we should have to go to him with our list of 27 things. If he does one of those, if he gives $50 million or whatever Roland's numbers were, billions, to to black schools, what we need to say is thank you, next right. on the list.
Thank you very much. But here's my point. I've heard African Americans in organizations literally say, "We're not going to engage on anything." And I went,
If we allow, and this is exactly what Donald Trump is doing when he went to media takeout to release this plan, where he is trying to flip us to believe that if he can get our support on one thing, that we should be like, oh yes, thank you, Donald Trump, while you're putting more police into our communities, while you're killing more, but giving less access to healthcare. All of those issues are equally important to African Americans, and I will also argue a little bit more important than just reaching us when we go to an HBCU.
Okay, hold on one second.
That's not it.
Okay, I'm going to a break. But when I come back, Amber, I'm gonna ask you the question. When we come back, I'm gonna ask you.
Okay.
If you're sitting with Donald Trump, what are your three demands?
Yes.
And what will be your answer if he says yes to those three demands? That's what I want you to answer that when we come back.
Okay.
News 1-9 TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, welcome back to News One Now. Joe Jefferson Nuri, Brandon Cooper, Amber J. Phillips. So, Amber, here's my question. let's say there's a meeting, me at the White House. First, I ask this. If you get a meeting at the White House, would you go?
Yes.
Okay. And would you? And if you go, what are the three issues that you're going to say, these are my three demands?
My three demands are reparations. I would like that for Black folks. My second demand is a repeal of Hyde, which is a government, which is an amendment that won't allow for funding, public funding of abortion for low-income folks who are part of the ACA. And then my third one will be a repeal of, like, voter registration. We should get rid of voter registration in this country. Those are the things that I would focus on.
Okay, those are your three issues.
Yes, those are my, if I had to put them out right now, those would be my three issues.
And if the Trump administration, Donald Trump says, our public support number three. Your response?
Great, let's do this. But also, I'm not saying that I would be like, thank you, Donald Trump, or stop any of these other resistance fights against him.
And that was, that's why I asked you that question.
Great.
So the point is not
that's coming out right now is that you all want us to give the way it's being read, the way it's being presented on snapshots like media takeout, is give this person a chance. Give this person a chance before they have actually
Amber, stop. First of all, if anybody is looking for public policy on media takeout,
Brandon, go ahead.
I was going to say, back to the points, my three things would be jobs, education, and security in our communities. And I'll say on education, we're talking about during the break. No one, I think, on this panel can agree that there's not an issue or some issues with education in the Black community right now. Donald Trump's offering $20 billion and a change, and we should be at the table and seeing how that rolls out. Again, we should not be complacent. We should not let him have a blank check. But to say that we should not engage with him and give him a fair assessment of his work, if he does something good, thank you, Donald Trump, does something bad, no, Donald Trump. But to say that we cannot engage, I think, is just a fallacy. We need to be engaged, no matter who's in the office in the White House.
Go ahead.
We need to have a table.
My three things is, first, a full and honest engagement with the Black community and a conversation where he listens and not just it dictates what he thinks the Black community should have. And those leaders that come to meet have to be beyond the top seven. It can be beyond the NAACP. We have to have Black Lives Matters. There's a lot of smaller groups that don't have the national recognition that should be at the table. My second one would be the Affordable Care Act. I think it is very important. I think that people and health care and the peace of mind to be able to have a test before you have the breast cancer is very important. And so whatever he's going to do with it, it has to be a gentle reform. And if we got 20 million people into it while Obama was in office, I want to see 20 million people more into it. And my third would be don't militarize our community.
Here's my point. It's very simple. Presenting a list of demands does not mean
I'm your buddy.
You're going to get my vote.
Right.
What it means is I am here representing the interests of Black people, whether it's Donald Trump sitting in that seat, whether it was President Obama sitting in that seat, whether it was Hillary Clinton sitting in that seat, because in fact, when I did the commentary on Tom Joyner, this Platform for America, I decided on that before the election. And I said, I'm going to do this on the Thursday after the election, did it on the Monday of the election, so regardless of who wins. What Robert Abbott did, seriously? What Robert Abbott did in 1928, he put it on the front page of the Chicago Defender.
Uh-huh.
And his deal was, this is the agenda, Republican or Democratic president. You read Ethan McCallie's book, The Chicago Defender, he lays out there were Republican presidents, there were Democratic presidents, they made their demands regardless, and then when they got one, you know what he did? He scratched it off. He said, thank you very much, Mr. President,
Here's the next one.
Which is the same thing. When the LGBT community gave President Barack Obama a 54-page agenda in the first 60 days of his presidency, I remember in 2010, when they repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they celebrated for 48 hours, and I remember the headline of Politico was, what's next? What's next? Mm-hmm. Our job is to say to Trump, fine, we want this, fine, what's next? What's next? And if we say we want these two, you disagree on these eight, we're going to fight like hell on these eight and agree on these two, mm-hmm. but don't think we're not going to fight on these eight. Yeah.
But you know, Donald Trump's election is a pivotal moment in our history. We have to choose sides. White people have to choose sides. This is clear. This is a battle line. And you have to choose sides. You're on this side or you're on. But if you're on this side, our side, I would say we have to engage it. It's a war.
But here's a piece. But for black folks, the side that we got to choose is, and that is, we in this for ourselves.
Thank you.
And the bottom line is, we
I'm
are.
Not sure the white people are at the table then, yeah. Because then,
if not, we'll only settle for these business agreements. First, what we got to do is, we got to make sure we at the table and we actually talking to one another before we invite anybody else on the outside. I got to go to a break. When we come back, new numbers show white folks are losing their hold as a majority race in the U.S. We'll break down these changing demographics and what they mean for the country right here at News 1 9 TV 1.
Wherever you are, your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
No, we're going to build the wall. People are saying, do you think Trump's going to build the wall? Trust me, we're going to build the wall.
Well, the call for building a wall is not going to change the demographic shift in America. By 2044, there will be no one group that is a dominant group in the United States. And the reality is here right now, some 17 states, more whites are actually dying than whites who are being born. And so what does this mean for America? Keep in mind, folks, in 2000, 77% of the population was white in America. Hispanics make up 12.5%. Black folks were about 13%. Now you're talking about a totally different deal. By 2050, whites will make up 46%. Of the U.S. population. Hispanics will see the biggest increase at 30%. Black Americans will be around 15% as well. By 2050, 54% of the population will be minority, no one particular group. So what does it mean? What does it mean for our politics? How do we even deal with that? Joining us on the phone is from Houston, Texas, Stephen Kleinberg, sociologist and the founding director of the Kinder Institute for Urban Research at Rice University. Stephen, I keep making the point that people don't understand this is going to impact our politics over the next generation, the two generations.
Hi, Roland. You bet. We're in the midst of an epic transition. The United States, throughout all of its history, was an amalgam of European nationalities and is now becoming a microcosm of the world. An earlier generation, overwhelmingly Anglo, born during the baby boom period, is moving rapidly into retirement, being replaced by a very different generation of Americans, a mix of all the ethnicities of all the religions of the world. It's a truly remarkable moment as America becomes a universal nation, the first nation in the history of the world that can say we are a free people and we come from everywhere.
Stephen, what we're also dealing with, and I've been talking about this here, that we have to confront what I call white fear. What I mean by that is, that doesn't mean, oh my God, all these people are raging racists and bigots, but the reality is we have been a white dominant nation for all of these years, and there are some folks who are unsettled by this changing demographic.
Absolutely. If you had any doubts about that, remember the election just a couple of weeks ago. Of course, this is a tremendous transformation for all of us. And some cities are, of course, and regions are much more ahead of the curve than others. But all of America is turning into this very different world. No force in the world is going to stop Houston or Texas or America from becoming more African American, more Asian, more Latino and less Anglo as the 21st century unfolds. Nothing can stop that. And of course there's concern, and you know, my country is changing, and suddenly it's not the country I used to know. And you combine that with the economic problems of the loss of good blue-collar jobs that are locking people out of opportunity if they don't get the education they need for the jobs of the 21st century, and you've got a tremendous basis for anxiety and insecurity as we undergo what is going to be, as I say, a just epic transformation of what America in the 21st century will be a different place than America that we've known through all the past of our history.
And so, Stephen, when you see these stories, when you see folks talking about, well, this was happening in America, and then, well, no, it's not. This is really about economic angst. I mean, I think people are lying. There was a study that was done in September, University of Chicago, where they asked a question, are you optimistic about the future of America? And African Americans were at the bottom economically, were at 58%. Hispanics were around 50%. Whites were at 41%. And I keep telling people, you got to go inside of those numbers. There is this fear that, oh my goodness, that I'm going to actually have to compete. I'm going to actually have to be in a situation where I'm not going to be able to, frankly, maximize white privilege.
Exactly. Where all of us now are going to be minorities. No one group will dominate in the way that whites have dominated throughout all of our history. Between 1492 and 1965, 82% of all the human beings on this planet who came to America came from Europe. Another 12% were Africans brought as slaves to serve the Europeans. This is an amalgam of European nationalities throughout all of our history. That's what America has been. And now we're becoming, as I say, the first nation in the history of the world that is that's made up of all the peoples of the world. And it's a remarkable moment. And the cities like New York and Los Angeles and Miami and Chicago and Houston and Dallas and Boston and San Diego are at the forefront of what's happening across the board. And it was interesting to see in this election that it was people in those big multi-ethnic enclaves of the major cities that were overwhelmingly voting for the Democratic Party, and the smaller rural dying communities in the across the Midwest and elsewhere voting for Trump with that sense of I want my country back.
All right, Stephen Kleinberg, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Hey, you bet.
All right, folks, when we come back, gospel artist Ja'Kalyn Carr talks about her new album, The Life Project, next on News 19 TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Ja'Kalyn Carr came on the gospel scene at 14 years old. Since then, she's blossomed into one of gospel music's most respected voices. She continues her successful run with her album, The Life Project, which debuted at number one on Billboard's top gospel album charts. She joins me now from Skype from Atlanta. Ja'Kalyn, how you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm doing great. Number one's not bad.
Oh, no, not at all.
So how has all of this changed your life?
Oh, my goodness. It has changed my life tremendously. I love doing what I do. And most importantly, I love seeing people inspired, because that's the reason why I do what I do, so that people can become better people and they can, you know, grow in life. And so I just love releasing inspirational music that do just that.
All right. So whose music do you listen to when you don't have your own on?
My favorite is Pastor Shirley Caesar.
Well, I'm sure you probably gonna have your own. You name a challenge.
Actually, we did. She challenged me to one, and I posted it on my social media.
Okay. and again, when you look at the success, why do you believe that this album has impacted the folks the way it has?
Well, The Life Project, when you think about the name, it taps into different areas in the lives of people, and it can relate to you as well. You get the song You're Bigger. My first single from off the album is talking about how much the enemy sometimes can supersize our problems to where it seems like we can't overcome it. You know, but there is a God, and the same as Jesus Christ, and what's too big for you is just right for Him. So all you got to do is give it to Him, and then you have other songs on there really, you know, relating to you and causing you to become even better and pulling you to where you're supposed to be in life.
So what's next? Are you just going to ride this till the wheels fall off? As Martin Lawrence said?
Well, I just released my first Christmas single called You Are Our Joy Christmas, and it is available for download on all digital outlets where music can be purchased. And I'm just excited about that, working on a lot of things for the year 2017. And those who want to stay informed about it, you stay connected with me on my social media at Ja'Kalyn Carr, Ja'Kalyn Carr.
All right, then. Well, look, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Congratulations on your success with this new album, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, News One Now. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, birthday shout out. NBA player Brandon Knight turns 25 years old today. Alfred Enoch, known for his role as Wes Bibbins in the ABC drama How to Get Away with Murder, or he used to be, turns 28. Rapper Tretch, one half of Naughty by Nature, turns 46. What up, brother? On this day in history, in 1859, white abolitionist John Brown is hanged for his raid on the Harper's Ferry Federal Armory. In 1884, Granville T. Woods patents an improved telephone transmitter. And in 1969, Marie Van Britten Brown patents a home security system. Monday on News 1 Now, the producers of the new film about the drama facing two friends the day the Civil Rights Act was signed will be on the show. Plus, singer Keith Sweat talks about his new project as well. Don't forget, you can also hit me on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. You can also go to my Facebook, News 1 Now Facebook page, my Facebook page, see clips of the show, all that good stuff. You name it, we got it. And also, today, I'm going to be at the University of Delaware, tonight, University of Delaware, at the University Center for their pre-Kwanzaa event. Trust me, I will have something to say about the issue of black folks and how do we unify moving forward. You know, the last few weeks we've had Wisdom of the Elders. It was that conversation with Bob Johnson. It's a part of it. We had Andrew Young. We had Reverend Jackson. We had Merle Evers Williams. So we've done that. Now, what's going to happen is a week from now, I'm going to have wisdom from Next Generation in terms of what is the path forward for African Americans. You don't want to miss that conversation. And also, Sunday, December 4th. Do y'all know what Sunday is? That's the anniversary of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated being founded. And so that's where I'm rocking the black and gold with my life member pin as well. Been a member since spring 1989, Powell Macron, Texas A&M University. So I had Lil Kappa, Bob Johnson, who was here, Eric, who's in the control room, is a Lil Omega. But ain't nobody bad as the Alphas, because you know why? Alpha's your daddy. That's right. You don't start the Greek alphabet unless you start with Alpha. So shout out to all my Alpha brothers. That's what happens when it's your show. So Amber, when you get one, you can give anybody you want a shout out. But don't do whatever you want to do. Y'all have a great one. I gotta go. 1906.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.